this year, like, I will actually be giving 7 lectures. So you got 6 lectures from Mina already. And in the next 7 lectures, we'll be talking about mostly like the observable consequences and observational evidences for there being beyond standard model physics. In particular, we'll be talking about dark matter. So in the first 6 lectures, right, like you heard about grand unified theory, supersymmetry, extra dimensions, the hierarchy problem, maybe also the cosmological constant problem, I don't know. But like these are all theoretical puzzles. And in my half of the lectures, I will be mainly giving you experimental evidences. Okay? So that's how we divide it up, like the topics. So the question that we want to understand in the next 7 lectures is what does or does not, and in a lot of cases, unfortunately, might happen in the universe. And here, like I'm talking about our universe, right? The universe we live in. I don't care about what could happen in some other universes. Okay, it's about our universe. What is there? What content do we have in the universe? And unfortunately, we don't know everything. And some of the things we only have guesses. And then, like we've had guesses for the last 50 years, many of which was proven to not happen. So I will be telling you about like both like what we know happens, what are the guesses, and how to either experimentally verify or like disprove some hypotheses. Okay, and in particular, since we'll be talking about dark matter, we'll be talking about what type of things can be dark matter, and what we know, at least like in the simple cases, has been excluded as a dark matter candidate. So these are the things that we'll cover, and we'll be doing, I think, like a quite different type of detective work than what you are learning from most other classes. Maybe the only exception is cosmology, and maybe some classes that Will is teaching, where most of these classes you are going to do mostly theoretical analysis or like theoretical detective work. And I'll call these things theoretical puzzles, and Mina talked about many of those. Yeah, as I said, we'll be focused on experiment. And yeah, okay. So as you know, like we've made like over the many years in the last 2,000 years, depending on which civilization you come from, we've learned a lot about our world, right? About physics. And almost all the major leaps in our understanding of the universe is motivated by some experimental evidence. The only exception I think of is Einstein, who just came up with like a relativity, especially general relativity. But everything else is like mostly like led by like experimental evidences. And then like people look at the experimental evidences, come up with a hypothesis, and then like come up with theories, and then like you test with new experiment. And through this process, starting from Galileo's time, we have learned a lot about what is happening inside our universe, right? So, and similarly, like in this class, we'll be taking this approach, at least in the next 7 lectures. So, in particular, I will be talking about a few things. We'll be discussing the following. The first one is related to how BSM show up in cosmology. where actually most of the evidence for the existence of Beyonce monophysics exists come from cosmological measurement. So today we'll say something about baryogenesis, and actually like mostly just like a baryon freeze out. And then like we'll spend some time talking about the thermal history of different dark matter scenarios. In particular, we'll be talking about the example of WIMPs. And then like I will be talking about the example of axions. So that's one. Then I will say something about what I call like a BSM as stars. Okay. So here we have also these light particles, so for which like axion is an example. And we'll be talking about how we can use stellar measurement. The fact that some stars exist, right? We know the sun exists, something like that, to already like provide a lot of knowledge about what could be out there as beyond Santa Monica scenarios. And then like I will also be talking about galaxies as a laboratory where we learn some important lessons about some different type of dark matter, especially WIMPs. So that will be the second part. And then in the last part, I will also be telling you how beyond standard monophysics show up in labs. Okay. So this will be two parts. First, I will be also telling you about like how do we do WIMP searches in the lab. What comes in to our mind when we are designing different searches, either for direct detection or indirect detection of heavy dark matter particles. How to build these experiments. What are the important things to keep in mind? And then I will use some example to also tell you how to design experiment to look for some light boson dark matter, for example, the axion. Okay, so we'll talk about both where the signal is coming from, but also where the backgrounds are coming from. And yeah, some of you already know the background is most important, much more important than the signal, right? Okay. So that's going to be the plan of the seven lectures. And hopefully, like by the end, we'll address the following questions. Okay. And it's something that you'll also be having in mind, like when you are thinking about beyond standard monophysics, dark matter, etc., which or like a designing any experiment, trying to figure out whether I want to test the theory or not. Then, like these are the list of the questions that you will want to ask yourself before you go and talk to an experimentalist and tell him or her that like, look, let's do this. Okay, yeah. You convince yourself like you have a good answer to all of these questions, which includes the first one and most important, what evidence do we have? So here, again, like since we'll be mostly talking about dark matter, what evidence do we have for dark matter? Okay, so we know that 26% of the whole universe is dark matter. Actually, I won't spent a lot of time talking about this question since Wikipedia does a good enough summary of like all the evidences we have for dark matter, and you can go read it. The most important evidence is including the CMB and also like scale structures, and these are basically something that are cosmological evidences that you'll hopefully learn from Kendrick's class on cosmology. We know there are evidences, or the first evidence for dark matter come from galaxy rotation curves. right? The work by Vera Rubin, where she showed like there's excess matter inside the galaxies. And then when we talk about WIMPs, I will spend some time talking about this particular interesting case, which is the black bullet cluster, and what do we learn from these measurements? Okay, but like for now, like these are the evidences. At some point, I will give you more details about this. Okay, so that's one question. Question number two, and we'll at least spend two lectures on this, which is how are they produced, right? And most dark matter models actually fail at this stage. You just come up with something. Like this thing, like is quite dark. It doesn't interact. And then, like you can ask, you ask yourself, like, how are they produced? Then, like, if they don't interact, and then you just like stare at it and you're like, okay, failed, right? But like people are still looking for these type of things. And when you see somebody talk about dark matter model, which doesn't make very much sense, this is a question you can ask them, like, how are they produced in the early universe? Can we produce this particle? Is there a consistent production story? And by the end of the lecture, like today's lecture, I hope you'll really appreciate like this question as being important when we talk about the thermal history of the universe. In a way that highlights the dark matter. So, so once you have these, of course you can ask like what species, okay, or what type of particles can be dark matter, and this includes like the interaction strengths and also the mass. And I will come back to this question. Later, when we talk about like these two candidates and what type of conditions they need to satisfy to be a good dark matter candidate, and once you have like good answers, okay, I know how they are produced. I like them as a species. Then you can ask the question like how to search for them. Right? How do they interact? What type of interaction can be looked for? What kind of interactions cannot? And then you understand the interactions. You find the correct lab. Okay. You identify the technology that is most sensitive to this. Species, and then like maybe you come up with a constraint or like a detection, right? And at this point, you'll think about how to optimize my search. Right? How to beat down the background, and what type of lab, what type of equipment do I actually use? So for both 5 and 6, if you are in the business of searching for dark matter, you will realize that you are comparing two experiments, and the ratio is usually infinity, meaning that one is usually either infinitely better than another experiment or infinitely worse. As you will see, like there's a lot of like small parameters, dimensionful or dimensionless, which tells you like what type of searches will be important. And then, maybe you write down the model, and you try to understand like why it is relevant for something else. But these are the questions that most of which I will try to address a little bit in these lectures. And a disclaimer before we really start: for most of the lecture. Unless I really specify, okay, in some rare cases, okay, so pi is equal to 3, pi equal to 4, equal to 1, okay, meaning that like we don't care about the order one numbers, and I will give you a reason, and sometimes like we'll say like 4 pi is equal to 10, but like in most cases, like a 4 pi can be also equal to 1. Okay, and the reason for that is because when we are talking about either the production of the dark matter or how to look for them, we are dealing with numbers that are usually like orders magnitude different. For example, the two numbers that are of great importance when we talk about the production of dark matter is the Hubble parameter, right? The Hubble constant today, which in the unit, by the way, like h bar equal to c equal to k equal to 1. So this is the unit system where length, energy, they are all basically the same thing. There's only the energy unit. So in this unit, like the Hubble constant today is 10^-33 eV. Well, the other parameter, which is equally important, is the Planck scale, which is 10^18 GeV, or in other words, 60 order of magnitude bigger, right? So when we are trying to construct models, or like when we are trying to study like the behaviors of different scenarios with parameters that are 60 order of magnitude different, yeah, factor of 10 usually doesn't play a big role, okay? And it's more important that we understand like if the dynamics is happening around a TeV, a GeV, or EV, whether it's like a 5 TeV or 1 TeV, that type of details is not important enough that we'll spend a lot of time like trying to pin down. Right. Okay. So and yeah, that part. Okay. So so that's basically like the plan of the lectures. What type of things I will be covering? What type of questions we want to keep in mind? And the unit system that we're going to use, both in terms of the dimensionless dimension for numbers, and also the dimensionless numbers. Okay. So that's the rough plan. So let's get this up. OK. So what we are going to talk about today is mostly like a review of the thermal history of the universe, much of which like you might have seen like in a cosmology class. But like I want to like highlights like how we particle physicists think about these coincidences. So as you probably realize, like from the QFT lectures or quantum mechanics lectures, you had it from the very beginning, all the way to Minna's lecture like on Monday, most of these lectures are talking about a system with a few particles, a few fields, and how they interact. And actually, like many of the lectures are only about the vacuum state, right? So, but like when we are talking about the universe, though we sometimes say like the universe is mostly empty, it is certainly not. There's a lot of stuff in there. And thinking about like how like one or two particles collide in a QFT framework is definitely not a good approximation. Instead, like what you will see is like almost all the lectures that we'll be talking about, like classical physics is what you use. And then like sometimes we'll use like some field theory, but like it's usually going to be some thermal field theory instead of quantum field theory of field particles. So to start with, we'll be talking about what exists in the universe and how they evolve with time. And this is basically the topic of FRW universe. And this lambda CDM model. And the important equation that we are going to use in this lecture is basically the Einstein equation, which relates the metric with the energy momentum tensor. So and we are going to be working with the energy momentum tensor, which look like this. Okay, so it has a density and pressure. Okay, so we are the universe is mostly uniform and isotropic, so which motivates like this energy momentum tensor with the energy density rho and some pressure term, which is diagonal. Okay, and the FRW universe has a metric, which like this, where there's no explicit spatial dependence, just a time dependence telling you that the universe is changing as a function of time. And in this case, it is expanding, right? So when we have these two, we plug into the equation, and we can get two equations. So the first one relates is the equation for the density. Okay, and the second one is something related to the pressure. Okay, so as you see here, like pi is not equal to 3, not equal to 1. And the reason is like the 3, which relates these two equations, is actually important. So we can define the couple constant, which is basically a dot squared is a dot a over a squared. So this basically tells you like the Hubble constant is a measure of the energy density of the universe. And then there is another parameter which relates the pressure with the density. And this parameter tells you about the equation of state of this medium that inside that's existing in the universe. And this parameter taking different numbers would mean would be for different type of species. Okay. So we can do some manipulation. So the thing you can do is you can take the time derivative of equation one, and minus like a Hubble constant times equation two, and you are going to get the continuity equation. Right, by getting rid of the a double dot term. And that is basically how the energy density change depending on the energy density and the pressure in the system. Okay, so now we can consider a couple examples. So example one, we can have radiation. Domination. Okay. So for radiation, the energy density, so there's no energy scale in the problem other than the temperature. So the energy density of the radiation goes as the temperature of the system to the fourth power. In this case, the pressure is equal to one third times the density. So this is the equation of state. And which tells you that like when you plug in here, right, as time goes by, the density is going to decrease because of this minus sign. So as T and A increase, rho decrease, which also means like the temperature is decreasing. The pressure decreases, and the temperature will go as 1 over A always is decreasing. And the Hubble constant, which is equal to now like goes as a rho over M Planck squared, is going to decrease as well, which means that the universe, and inverse Hubble is the size of the universe, and this means like the universe expanding, right? So expanding. Okay, and at the same time, it cools down. You can check that by plugging into this equation that the scale factor A actually goes as t to the 1/2 in the case of radiation nomination. And what is important is that a double dot is going to be a number that is negative, which tells you that if you have a radiation nomination, the expansion actually slows down. Similarly, you have matter domination. So I'm trying to go a little bit fast since most of you have taken some cosmology, but like if you are confused, like let me know. Huh? So in this case, the pressure is zero. We're talking about non-resistive particles. There's no pressure. They only have some density. The density, it goes as the mass of the particle times the number density. And then the number density goes as 1 over a cubed, or goes as t cubed, okay? Or goes as a to the minus 3, so instead of a to the minus 4. So in this case, again, like as time and a increases, the density will go down, right? The number density goes down, the Hubble constant will go down, and the universe expand. So pretty much the same thing, everything is similar. But importantly, the scaling tells you that like as the universe expand, the matter dilutes much a little bit slower than radiation. So this goes as a to the minus 4. Well, this goes as a to minus 3. So we're going to put a summary of this in a bit. OK, so now let's move on to this part. So we have the third case, which is the CC domination. So in this case, P is equal to minus rho. That's the equation of state of a cosmological constant. So in this case, if you go to this equation, right, like the right-hand side is 0. So rho dot is equal to 0. So the energy density doesn't change anymore. A dot over A is a constant. So the solution would be something like going as ht, the universe expand, and then like a dot is positive, a double dot is positive, which means like the universe is expansion is accelerating. Okay, so this is what happens roughly happening today and during inflation. Okay. So I'm sure like you're going to play a bit more like in the cosmology class. This is just a quick summary. And mostly like we are going to be working with case 1 and 2. And so if you haven't been doing cosmology, then it's good to check the following. So in the radiation domination and the matter domination. So in this case, like a of t goes as t to the 1/2. Here it goes as t to the 2/3. The matter in radiation domination it goes as a to the minus 3, but here like it goes as 3 minus 3 halves. Here it goes as minus 2. The radiation would dilute faster. So in matter domination, it go as 10 minus 2, and then this this goes as a third. Okay, so you can check this table, which tells you like the different components, how do they scale as a, and how do they scale it with time. Okay. And for today, we are only going to be using like this part here. All you need to know is like in the if I plot like these densities as a function of a, CC of course doesn't change. The matter and the radiation dilute at a different rate, and the radiation dilute faster. So if we put them all in the same plot, okay. So let me make it very big. I have the energy density as a function of a, right? So I just said, actually, like, let me use some, the cosmological constant is a constant, okay? Is this easy to see, like this color? It's okay? Okay, so this is the radiation. And then let me use another one for the matter. Okay, so this would be raw matter. Okay, so this goes as a to the minus 4, a to minus 3, and a constant. Okay, so the reason I'm drawing like this is because this is actually what happens. And I'm sure like in your first lecture, first or second lecture, you learn about gut. And the grand unified theory is about three lines, which almost meet. Here you see a similar situation. You also have three lines, and they almost meet. But like in this case, of course, in like the gut, we don't know whether they actually meet or not. In here, like we know they actually don't meet, right, at the same point. And what is more dramatic is the fact that they don't meet at the same point is awfully important for our existence. Okay. So this is roughly today. Okay. This time is called a very important time in the universe evolution. It's called the time of matter radiation equality. Okay. So I will be talking about BBN a bit, maybe. So BBN is sometime like early on. Okay. So we know like this is actually the course of event that happened at some point like a ratio of like 1,000, or a is roughly like 10 minus 3. So let's say like this point is roughly like equal to 1. At the point like the a is 10 minus 3, or the universe size is like three elementary smaller, three elementary smaller in one direction, we have the time of matter radiation equality, okay, at this point, the fact that like this point happens before here is very important for our existence, okay. So the reason, which you will learn more from Kendrick again, is that in both the radiation domination and in CC domination, in both cases, the system has pressure. And as a result, the density perturbation won't be able to grow. And we know from the CMB, we see from the CMB that the density perturbation or the temperature perturbation you see from the CMB is very, very small. It's of order like 10 minus 4 or 10 minus 5. Well, we know that in order to form galaxies, which is crucial for our existence, right? We need like the density perturbation to go to be order 1 so that the structures can collapse. Okay? So which means that you need And like this density perturbation grows in matter domination as a function of the scale factor. So what it means is like you, like in order for our existence, in order for the galaxies to form, which is of course a prerequisite for star formation and everything else, and our existence, of course, this event has to happen at least like I think like 100 to 1,000 times, in this unit like earlier than today, than the CC takeover. So if like if this period is shorter than what we measure, then nothing like us will ever exist. Okay, so this is a big curiosity, and this curiosity has led actually like Steven Weinberg in roughly like let's see, 40 to 50 years ago, to come up with anthropic reasoning, saying that the cosmological constant has to be smaller than something, but like it will roughly be at that value, which is actually very close to the value that we eventually observe later today. So it's related to the cosmological constant problem, but like you can also see it in this plot. It's like the cosmological constant problem, of course, is a hierarchy problem. But like even if you just stare at this plot, the fact that the cosmological constant is just the right size to allow for our existence is quite strange. And that's where I will leave the discussion. Yeah.
So could you remind, like, why do we need like matter domination period for perturbations to grow? Why this cannot happen in like radiation dominated?
So if there's a significant pressure,
yeah.
Okay, so like of course like you're going to learn something like that is more than just those words, but like if you have a significant pressure, in a pressurized system, the just like a balloon, right? Like the gas doesn't cluster a point, okay. Right?
So it doesn't allow to like grab. Yeah.
So the pressure will like resist the gravitational pull of the matter into a point. Okay, so then like this density perturbation will just move out, it won't grow. Yeah. And similarly, like in CC domination, like things are diluting too fast. Yeah. So it's only like during matter domination, like gravity can play a significant role, which makes them actually cluster, like a cluster and the density perturbation to grow. So when I say like not grow, it's not totally right. In radiation domination, they grow logarithmically. But it's a 5-order magnitude. If you want to grow logarithmically, it takes like a basically infinite amount of time for this thing to actually grow to a point where like it will be significant. But like that's the importance of this period of matter domination for our existence. Okay. And so this is a coincidence. It's a scary one, right? And if you think about it, when we talk about gut, right, we are talking about a number which is like 1 over 137, the fine structure constant, at like and a number which is order 1, meeting at some high energy scale, right? So like you are like at a value which is like 1 over 40-ish, right? So there, like you are talking about a change of order a few. Right, in the phi structure constant. Here it's more dramatic, because if we just go to the time of EBM for which we actually have absolute measurement, knowing that this period has happened, and compute the energy density of these three curves, then you find something crazy, because at the BBN time, this energy is MeV to the sixth, fourth power. This is MeV cubed times 0.1 eV, roughly. And this, the cosmological constant, is like milli eV to the fourth power. Okay. And that's only BBN, right? And we know this sphere has existed, Usually, like we think, like in the standard scenario, like the universe extends all the way to maybe the gut temperatures, and but like even at BBN, this is like 10 to minus 12 eV to the 4, right? This is 10 to the 17 eV to the 4, and this thing is 10 to the 24 eV to the 4, right? So these numbers are like a 36 order of magnitude different. And yet, like they almost at the, meet at a point, and they cannot meet at a point, right? Like they just need to miss each other a little bit, such that we can exist. So that's a big puzzle, and like this coincidence is something that one needs to think about when we think about the dark matter, right? So. So before like I go on, like let me just give you some measurements, list some measurements that point to the BSM physics. So you might all have seen the pie chart of the different energy densities inside the universe, but we have measured a couple ratios that are of importance. So the first one is the number density of the baryons in the universe today over the number density of the photon, and this number is 10 minus 10. Okay. We have the dark matter density over the baryon density, or like the standard model density, right? So, and this is roughly a factor of 5. The cosmological constant somehow is non-zero, and is really, really tiny, and order like a milli eV to the 4. And we know that there might be some like radiation, but like we don't have any evidence for it. And the radiation compared to the radiation that's in photon is less than 10%. So that's basically the numbers that we have. Apart from the last one, the first three all point to something that we don't know about the standard model. Okay. So the question is, so like I want to understand the dark matter, right? Like what this line is doing. But this line actually contains two components, as you already see from here. So this line, this green line, include both the matter that we know and the matter that we don't know, right? Like, so there is a baryon and there is dark matter. And the two of them are almost equal in abundance, with the dark matter slightly more than the baryon. So the question now, instead of looking at the dark matter, let's first see like what is the baryon doing? Okay. So how to understand the fact that like the baryon somehow has a density which satisfies this condition that at around like a factor of 1,000 in redshift, it is almost the same as the radiation energy density, and then today is almost the same at the cosmological constant. Okay, so let's do the baryons. Okay, questions? So we are going to do baryon freeze out. Okay. So basically the question is like, what is the baryon doing at early time? So let me take this back. So we know that the standard model particles, which contain, well, like you hopefully all taken the standard model class, at the higher energies, SU3. Deconfines. It's like asymptotically free. We have all kinds of quarks and leptons. And when the temperature is very large, both of these will have thermal abundances, and they will behaving like radiation, right? So what we know is that, let me move this line of BBN to a bit later. So let's say BBN is here. Okay, so we know that the baryon at late time it looks like matter, But at early enough time, it actually looks like radiation, right? When the temperature is higher than any of the baryon masses, right, or the standard model masses, the up quarks, the down quarks, the leptons, they are all radiation-like, right? So they, which means like at, in the early universe, they almost trace the line of raw radiation. At some point, which is basically the time of when the temperature is order of GeV, right? The temperature becomes cold enough that protons and neutrons form. They either decay or annihilate away, such that eventually, at a later universe, I have very little amount of them left, right? So what this is describing is a process that takes the baryons from this line to here, right?
Yeah.
So we are trying to draw a line like this. And let's see basically what sets this. OK, so that's the question.
So just to repeat, if I correctly understand it. So on very high temperatures, there is no, so it's before SSB. So like all the everything is massless still.
Yeah.
And then when it cools down, SSB happens. So they acquire mass. And they become
like, what happens? What did you say?
So
talking about the transition.
Transition, yeah.
So like the Higgs one or the QCD one. So the Higgs phase transition happens like a little bit earlier, right? That happens around the weak scale. Then like particles gets a tiny mass, but the mass, for example, up quark get a mass of MeV.
Okay.
But like the mass is so much smaller than the temperature at that point still. So this particle is effective massless, so they still behave like radiation. Only when the temperature gets to the QCD phase transition, when the temperature is order GeV, QCD confines, you form protons and neutrons, which are GeV mass. Now the temperature becomes smaller than that, and then like they become non-relativistic.
Okay.
And that's the process we are talking about. It's not like the first process, which gives them a tiny mass.
Yeah.
As long as the mass is smaller than the temperature, I don't care.
Okay.
Right? So of course, like the top quark, the bottom quark, they are slowly all like decaying away. But eventually, we are interested in like what happens to the protons and neutrons. Answer your question?
Yes.
Good. Everyone else? OK. So, we are going to say like what happens here. OK, so as I said, in the early universe, baryon is like a radiation at a temperature much bigger than a GeV. Baryon actually don't exist, but like the standard model, light particles species, which are the light quarks, UD and also S, the leptons, electron muon tau, these are all like radiation-like. Maybe something else. So, and then like I got to a GeV. Then these particles form baryons, and the lightest one include the neutron and the proton, right? So when my temperature continues to decrease, these things become non-relativistic, and they freeze out. So the process that, for example, describes this freeze out is this thing where these two can go to, for example, E plus E minus, can go back and forth to photons, and go back and forth, for example, to pions, to something else. So at that temperature, right, like these particles are heavy, these particles still remain light. And in the early universe, this process of going to the left and to the right is in equilibrium. So it happens at the same rate. So the density of both is roughly fixed. Well, at low when the temperature is low, this process start to not be in equilibrium. Okay. So at temperature that is smaller than proton, what happens is that the distribution of the protons and the electrons will start to look different. So I will draw these. So this is the distribution as a function of the energy. So initially, both of them has a distribution. So the proton has a let's say like a photon has a distribution like this. The proton has a distribution which is roughly like that. Okay, and let's say like this is the mass of the proton. That's the energy. Okay, so at high temperatures, these two distributions, I'm hoping to draw them to be exactly the same. Okay, and even though like there is a proton mass, as long as it's much smaller than temperature, for all practical purposes, these two distributions are the same. So there is equilibrium. So now, imagine that the temperature start to decrease, right? Or like then like basically, so and this location is basically the temperature, right? Ish. So as the temperature start to decrease, but let me just plot the temperature at the same location. If I am talking about temperature decreasing, it's decreasing with respect to the energy scale and proton. So effectively, we are thinking about like the m proton is moving to the right in this plot. So let's say like m proton now is here. Okay. Now this is the difference. Okay. So this is the function energy of the photon, and this is the same function now of the proton, right? Okay, so like at this point, the proton, because it has a mass, it cannot have like zero energy, right? So now the distribution starts to look different, and this difference basically is coming from the fact that like this process is no longer in equilibrium, right? So now if I'm comparing the energy density that's in the proton compared to the energy density in the photon, what I'm effectively comparing is like the area of this triangle here, well, somewhat a triangle, compared to like all the area like below like this orange curve. And this ratio is the number density of the proton or the baryon over the number density of the photon is e to the minus mass of the particle temperature, roughly. Okay, because the Boltzmann distribution at high energy is just exponential tail. Okay, so yeah, again, this process is no longer in equilibrium because only the photons in this triangle from the Boltzmann distribution will be able to go to a proton, while the proton will decay, like all of them will be annihilating into the photon. Okay, so like what this tells you is that as the temperature continues to decrease, this number becomes very large. It's an exponential suppression, so quickly all the protons go away, right? Which means like we are going to left with none. But this is not what happened, right? And the reason is because there is a symmetry. Okay. We have a lot of baryons in the universe, but no anti-baryons, right? There is excess baryon minus anti-baryon. Okay, which and today at least we know that the baryon number is almost conserved since we haven't seen proton decay. So we know when we are talking about this is decreasing as exponential, what we really mean is the sum of the number density of the baryon plus anti-baryon is going as exponential. However, if we have a symmetry, of course, like the sum is always bigger than the difference, right? So eventually it won't go to zero by the exponential. It will saturate at some value, and that value is the initial density baryon asymmetry, which is 10 or minus 10, right? And since we are talking about the number density ratio, this ratio is a constant through the universe evolution. Okay, so somehow, some way, there is something in the early universe which is not described by the standard model, which sets this ratio to be 10 minus 10. Okay, we don't know what it does, what type of theory that actually does it. But like there's a lot of theory people come up with in the past, which basically get to this number of 10 minus 10.
So zeta symmetry necessarily started at the proton scale?
No, the symmetry can start from like a very long time ago.
Okay.
Usually, like the model does it like at very high energy scales. Okay. But like there are like models which does the baryogenesis around the TeV. And there are some models which even do it like at very late time. But all of these has very little experimental evidences or like experimental searches that we can tell one way or the other. And hence, like the question of baryogenesis, though it's a very interesting one, a very important one, is a research area which is in some sense in stall, just because like we don't know how we can design experiments to verify or disprove the different hypotheses. But we are not like trying to build a model for baryogenesis. All we want to, what I'm trying to say is that there is a 10 order magnitude drop here, which is set by the asymmetry. And this 10 order magnitude drop basically ensures that like so at this time you drop by 10 order magnitude, but like over this whole period, right? Where the temperature change from from GeV to 0.1 eV, you recover the 10 order magnitude by the universe evolution. So that's how we have a rough coincidence at this time. Yeah.
So at this scale, already since you are below, already like since you are already in the regime of standard model, dark matter is already produced and is there as well, right?
So dark matter can be produced later.
Later?
It can be produced like later than this time, okay? Good question. So I'm going to motivate the next lecture right now, and that's basically the question you just asked, okay? So that's the case of the baryon, right? The reason like we are so interested in baryogenesis is because thinking that these three lines somehow meet at like a point and at two consecutive points, like is very weird. So when you think about the dark matter, which can be a different species, you also want to understand like how come that they also go through this point, right? Almost by a factor of five, and five is equal to one, right? So you want to have a story where like dark matter is doing something like the baryon, or something different, which makes it natural that like this meeting point is roughly at the right point. Okay, so there are three possibilities. There are four possibilities. The first one is just like the dark matter is just like that. It's produced in the very early on, like. At 10 to the 16 GeV, I'm tuning it, right? 20 order of magnitude, whatever, accepted. Okay, so that's a possibility, but like it's not a very nice one, right? When you think about it. So what are the options? Well, the first option is it is doing something like the baryon, but slightly different. Where again, like in the early universe, it's in some equilibrium. It's at some point it's going to be radiation-like, because we know like every particle, as long as it's hot enough, it's radiation, right? So it's radiation. At some point, there's a reason for it to drop by like a many order of magnitude, and then like it goes back to be the dark matter-like. And we need to understand like what sets this drop. And that is basically the scenario of WIMP. If the particle and antiparticle has no asymmetry, and then there is a slightly less interesting case of asymmetric dark matter, which is basically trying to build like a model like the baryon again. But the baryon, like we know, like it is 10 minus 10 because we measure it. For asymmetric dark matter, you need to come up with a number which has no relation with anything whatsoever, which somehow like cancel makes this jump cancel with like this evolution effect of the evolution. So that's case one. And next lecture, we are going to talk about WIMP. So there's also the possibility that the dark matter in the early universe is CC-like. Okay, so I can have a dark matter, which effectively does something like this. So it goes up, and at some point, it just plateaus. Okay, so in the early universe, it's like the density is preset. And then like at some point, it starts evolving. And then like at some at late time, it's matter-like. Okay, so maybe there is a reason why like this value is it is. And that is basically the case of a misalignment mechanism, which is how we produce axions. Okay, so this is case two. Okay, so that's number two. Number three is what if I just start from zero? Okay, so I can have dark matter which is zero. Oh, by the way, like next week we are going to talk about axions. So I can have zero to start with, and at some point it gets an amount that is similar to the standard model, because it is interacting with the standard model late. Okay, so this is a scenario which is also of great interest, and this is a scenario is called freeze-in. Okay, so you start with zero abundance of this particle, and it's never in some equilibrium. This particle has interactions such that the later it is, the more important the interacting rate is, and I will be talking about what I mean by the more important the interaction rate is, and which puts it in some thermal contact with the standard model, and it gets an abundance which somehow matches the dark matter abundance. So this scenario is called freeze-in. I'm not going to talk about it in lecture, but you are going to do a homework, and yeah, you can ask me like when you done the homework.
Yeah, so how is that like? So it starts from zeros and it starts to get interacting with the standard model, and
yeah,
then it has to turn off interaction again, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But like as you'll see, the turn on and turn off of the interaction is something that actually happens very naturally in the standard model. And I can give you a hint. Like if this particle has an interaction rate over Hubble, which is growing, but for like most of the time, but at some point, like the particle in the standard model that it is interacting with disappears, right? That will be a scenario which will do a freezing. So for that case, you are going to see like many dark matter candidates which has a mass over order MeV, and you already know like what is the particle that it was trying to interact with, and that's the electron. So at some point, the electron disappears, and the production of this particle stop, right? So that's the scenario which is called freezing, and you are going to work on it. It's kind of fun. So that's the three main dark matter production scenarios that people have looked at, and we are going to talk in lecture about two of them, and and the freeze in and freeze out are somewhat similar. So it is a good homework like a material to do once you learn freeze out. And you're going to see that, and I'm hoping like this plot is showing you that like if people come and tell you like I have some like a random particle which is dark matter, right? It doesn't sound as nice as what they are trying to tell you, because maybe. And actually, like it's a lot of the cases, in order for the particle that they want to be dark matter, they are doing something like this in this figure, such that somehow it gets you the right abundance at late time. And so, like, I can imagine, and you can always find a way to make this happen, thinking that this is happening in our universe. It's mostly like a wishful thinking, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I will stop, and I will see you Friday.
Thank you. And will you upload the notes, or should I take the pictures?
Huh?
Will you upload the notes, or should I take the pictures?
Notes.
She has notes. So this is from like last year, I think. I think like there's a little bit more material, but like, yeah.
You have one more lecture, so I have no idea what's on that one.
It's about how to build a WIMP experiment. Yeah. Okay. If you have questions, shoot me email, like we can chat or come to my office.